Okay, good morning, everyone. So the title of our shiur today is Equestrian Bravado. Very exciting, right?
Well, you have to know.
By the end of the shiur, I hope I know what that means.
Exactly. Or spec, right?
So we're gonna have to explore what that means over the course of our learning in anticipation of Parashas Bishalach. Vishiras Hayam, finally becoming free from the Egyptians. So I want to begin with an interesting she'ela, an interesting question that was posed to the late giant, the Sephardic chief rabbi, Rav Ovadia of Yosef Zatzal, which he addressed in here on page 1 in his response called Yechav Das, which is the collection of the anthology of responsa that's on the shorter side. Rav Ovadia has two multi-volume works of responsa. One is called Yechav Das, the other one is called Yabia Omer. Rav Ovadia, of course, was the great leader of Sephardic Jewry of this generation. He passed away just a couple of years ago. So Rav Ovadia has a very interesting shaila. Elascha, Lisha Alta, to your question. This is in the third volume of Yechav Das in Simen Pei Aleph. Itonaim Datiim. So what is an iton?
Newspaper.
That's right. So an itonai is a reporter. A newspaper reporter. Itonai. Itonai Dati, which means a religious journalist. Haim mutar la'itonaim mi Yisrael. Is it permitted for an Israeli, meaning Jewish, observant newspaper reporter, linsoa le'mitzrayim, to travel to Egypt, kidei lamod b'mikarov, to stand nearby, uledaveach, and to report al hamasa umatan? What's Masa Umatan?
Negotiations,
exactly. Transaction negotiations. L'shalom, regarding peace. Bidiyune Va'idat Kahir, regarding the Cairo conference. So I don't know which Cairo negotiations this tshuva was referring to, because there were several historically, right? There was a big one in 1943 about what would happen at the end of the war, and others. Later, of course, the peace treaty with Egypt. So Rav Ovadia was asked by this religious journalist if it's permitted for him to travel to Egypt and report on the negotiations for peace.
Because you're not allowed to return to
Mitzrayim. You can't go back to Mitzrayim.
Very good. So the question is, what's the issue? So the answer is that it doesn't actually specifically state this clearly in the Chumash, but it is pretty clear in the Rambam, and this is based off of Yerushalmi. Take a look on page number 2. The Rambam tells us, this is in Hilchos Malachim, and this is the first source that Rav Ovadia quotes. Umutar, we'll get there in a second. Umutar lishkon b'chol olam. It is permitted to live anywhere in the world. Chutz me'eretz Mitzrayim, except for the land of Egypt. And the Rambam then gives you the contours of the borders of Egypt. Minayam Agadol, 400 parsa by 400 parsa, opposite Kush, the desert. It's also to live there. It's also lehis yashiv shum to settle in it. Ubishlosha mekomos his sira Torah shalo lasho v'mitzrayim. And in three places the Torah warned us not to return to Egypt. Lo sosif and lo shuv baderech hazeh od, lo sosif od lirosa, and lo sosif ulirosam od ad olam. Says the Rambam, and don't be confused. Va'alexandria b'chlala iser. And Alexandria of Egypt is included in the Isser, and there is a Talmudic tradition about Alexandria, that there were Jews living there, and therefore they were censured, they were punished, etc. So the question is, Rav Ovadia is asked, is it permitted for a journalist to travel to Egypt and cover the negotiations. If there is a prohibition of living in Egypt, and it sounds like returning to Egypt, because the three psukim that we quote don't actually talk about living there. And the Rambam in Halacha Ches starts to give you an opening. So he says, Mutar lachzor le'eretz Mitzrayim. This is in Perakei Halacha Ches. You'll see it five lines from the bottom. It's permitted to return to the land of Egypt. L'schora, to do business. Ulik prakmatia, and for also deals. V'lichbosh aratos acheros ve'ein iser el lehishtakeasham. And the only iser is to settle there, and lehishtakea means to take roots there.
Didn't the Rambam take roots there?
So here's the Rambam's first opening, and this is going to start to kind of address the question that two of you have already alluded to, which was, the Rambam was born in Cordova, in Spain. His father was a very prominent Rav. Because of the influence of the Almohads, which was a super fanatic Muslim group, he had to leave. His family abandoned Spain and went to Morocco, which was kind of ironic because Morocco was actually the seat of these Almohads. The Rambam spent several years in Fez, and then he left Fez and he traveled east. First he came to Israel, and then he traveled south. He settled in Egypt, Fostat, and he became the chief medical advisor, the physician, to the Sultan. And the Rambam writes this in several letters where he describes his daily schedule, how he would travel to the palace, and he would come home and attend to the people's needs, and he hardly had any time to learn. So there is a rumor. This rumor is recorded in later Svarim in the name of the Sefer Kaftov Aferach by Rav Ishtori HaParchi, several years after the Rambam, that apparently that the Rambam would sign letters, sincerely yours, Maimonides, living in sin in Egypt. And the later authorities say, there's no way. We don't buy it. A, you know, they're not aware of any evidence that the Rambam signed letters like that. We have handwritten letters from the Rambam. We don't have any evidence that he signed that. And they say, it's impossible. How could it be that the Rambam would be in violation, an outright flagrant violation of a principle that he was well aware of, an Issur D'Oraisa? So, yes?
But I'm questioning. These psukim say live in. They don't say report.
Exactly. From. So
there's a big difference in.
Exactly.
And they also say you can't do business in.
Well, it says you can go for business. You may go for business. So you're going to point out.
Reporter is definitely
reporting
business.
Reporting to the outside world is a different thing than living in the land.
Exactly. So this is where we're going to get to. So Vern, already you're ahead of the game here. That's the bottom line.
I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry. You should be proud. So,
okay.
Not too arrogant.
Right.
So many...
Got to be humble.
That's right. So many point out, Rav Avanya and his tshuva and others, that, well, obviously the Rambam is not in violation of this law. And the reason is, and it's pretty clear from this Rambam, that the law, as you pointed out, the law does not mean that you're never allowed to visit Egypt. And it doesn't even mean that you're not allowed to live in Egypt. The Rambam says expressly that the only issur is lehishtakeya sham. When the verse describes how Yaakov Avinu, we say this every year in the Haggadah, why did Yaakov go down to Egypt? He went down because of economic necessity. Yaakov Avinu lived the entire rest of his life there. And what do we say? Yaakov Avinu did not go down lehishtakea. He didn't go down to take root there. Rather, lagur ba'aretz. He just came kind of to be a transient dweller, to be a stranger in the land. So you could suggest that perhaps the Rambam viewed himself, even though he definitely spent years and some of his very productive, certainly from in terms of writing the Yad HaZaka, you know, these are, you know, perhaps the most halachically important years of the Rambam's life were spent in Egypt. But he would say, look, if you asked him, he would probably say, I prefer not to live here. I'd be happy to go back to Israel. It happens to be that the Rambam initially was supported primarily by his brother. He had a brother, David, who was a business person, but unfortunately died and lost his fortune in a sea accident and was lost. And it's actually, this was a crushing blow for the Rambam personally, on a personal level. And that's part of why the Rambam had to go into the practice of medicine as to make a living, as a vocation. So if you would ask the Rambam, he probably would have said, you know, if things are good somewhere else, I tried to make it work in Fez, didn't work out. I'd be happy to live anywhere else than Egypt. It happens to be that Egypt is an economic center. I have a good job. So this is where I'm going to be. So if the Rambam is allowed to live there, and you're allowed to travel there for business, so Rav Avadya points out, it's certainly permitted to travel there, to report, and then go back to Israel. Good. That's the question, and that's the answer. So far, so good. But what interests me on a deeper level is... why is this issue there? What's the root of this issue? Why should it be that we make such a big deal? The Rambam quotes you three psukim, don't go back to Egypt. We've gone a lot of places, unfortunately. We've been kicked out of a lot of places. What's such a big deal that we shouldn't go back to Egypt, that the Torah has to repeat it three times, and that has to be a special issur? You know, we know the Gemara Ksubis at the end quotes one verse, Bavela Yuvo Vishamayu, that there's one opinion that says that you're not allowed to leave Babylonia, but it doesn't mean that there is an Isser to go back there once you leave there. This whole idea, there's something here. There must be some very serious consideration in terms of what Egypt means, what does it represent, that restricts us from going back there. And that's what I'd like to think about together. That's question number one. Question number two. Yes?
Pasuk of not doing the things in Egypt. Oh, also.
So that actually bolsters my question, because Kemase Eretz Mitzrayim is buttressed with Kemase Eretz Canaan. So, if we were so... I mean, obviously, the Kemase Eretz Canaan means we should drive out the people of Canaan, and then we won't have the Canaanite issues, and we won't have the Egyptian issues. Could be. But I think there's something perhaps even more. I'd like to draw your attention, turn to page 3 please, to a phenomenon that I'm not sure if we pay enough attention to this. You could tell me maybe I'm off the mark, but I think there's something here. What was the big deal about Kriyas Yamsuf? Why did the Jewish people sing Shira after Kriyas Yamsuf, after the splitting of the sea? What was such a watershed moment for them? Why was it so important?
People who tried to kill them were destroyed.
You want to say that again?
People who tried to kill them were destroyed.
Okay, what were you going to say?
I just said no pun intended when you said it was a watershed
moment. Thank you, Michael. That's good. Let's pick up on David's point. The people who tried to kill them were drowned. What is that? So what's the significance of that?
They're no longer going to go after them.
Right. So it's a, not because they had been freed last week in Parshas Bo.
Right.
But it's not the same. Why? Because in the back of their mind, they're still worried, you know, psychologically, maybe they're going to come after us. They had been enslaved for so long.
Yeah, that's why the Rabbanu Shalom took them on such a roundabout route.
It was a setup.
Yeah.
Great. So I would agree with that. And therefore, what's the main like image that you would expect leaves a roshim on the Jewish people? It would be an impact. What's the image that's really moving for them?
What's the psychological impact that remains from that too remains from generation to generation and stays with you, and I think that's the danger. that's why you don't go back.
Okay, we'll get to that. Let's develop this question first, then we'll come to why we don't go back in a second. So Vern's pointing out, which is a good shot, that we can't go back because of the deep-seated psychological influence that is difficult to eradicate, and that if you were to go back there, you would somehow be returning to your original masters, whatever. And it's interesting that, of course, throughout the desert, the Jewish people, they test, quote-unquote, HaKadosh Baruch Hu 10 times, Vayinasu Sizeh Eser Pimim, and every time, not every time, but a lot of the times, what do they keep saying? Oh, let's go back to Egypt. But so let's leave that for a second. So I'm not surprised that when the Jewish people are introduced to the Shira, they see Meis Asfas Hayam. What do they see? Dead on the edge of the sea. They see their tormentors, their masters. Meis Asfas Hayam. Great. So then the question that's troubling us is that the Torah doesn't seem to frame it that way. Let's start. We're going to see this a few times. Let's start on the right-hand column here in Perek Yudalid. Pasuk Tes. Vayirdufu Mitzrayim v'ayachareim v'yasigu osam chonim alayam. Kol sus rechev paro ufarashav v'chelo. Al pi achiros lefnei baal tzifon. The Egyptians, Egypt ran after them and they caught up to them. Who caught up to them? Well, it doesn't say Pharaoh.
The Egyptians.
The horses and the chariots of Pharaoh and their riders and their armies, al pi achiros. Then we go to Pasuk Chav Gimel, top left, circle. Vayirdefu Mitzrayim v'avo achareim. The Egyptians chase after the Jews headlong into the sea. Who chases them? Kol sus paro, the horse of Pharaoh. Richbo, his chariot, Ufarashav, and his riders, El Tochayam. What the heck? Such a big deal?
I read somewhere that the Bnei Yisrael were really upset or really questioned because we know that one of the plagues, all the animals were killed. And the question is, where do these animals come from? Those were for the Egyptians that, in a sense, believed or at least listened to Hashem, the good ones, and they put their... And now they gave these animals to the Egyptians to get the Jews.
Could be. Good. But even if that's the case, I'm trying to understand, what's with the horse? What's with the horse?
It's like a tinkler.
What is with the horse? Exactly. So that's what I'm trying to figure out. Why is that front and center? And here's the clincher. Ashir El Hashem, this is one of the highest moments in Jewish history. Oz Yashir Moshe Bnei Yisrael Ashir Azos Hashem Vayom Ulemer. What did they say? Ashir El Hashem Ki Goga
Sus
Virochvo Rama Vayom. A horse and his rider he threw into the sea. Ribono Shel Olam, it's a horse. Everything is about the horse. And what happens when Miriam sings a Shira? Miriam sings the truncated mini version of the Shira. All she has to tell you is Sus Virochvo Rama Vayom, and everybody says, "Ah, it's true. It's great." I am reminded of an anecdote. And the reason that this anecdote was told was for a different reason, but it highlights this point. Nechama's grandmother is married to Rabbi Ralph Pelkovitz. He should live and be well, of the five towns of Far Rockaway. So he used to tell a mashal, a story of a man, two people, who witnessed an event. You know that at the beginning of the 20th century, the end of the 19th century, there was a lot of unrest in Eastern Europe under the Tsarist government. You know, there were many decrees, a lot of unhappiness, and there were anarchists who would run around. So imagine there was a parade of the Tsarist government, and one of the officials, one of the high-ranking senior officers in the Tsar's a cabinet, the Minister of Defense, was making an appearance in a small town. And they were going to have a parade. And people are lined up to watch the parade, and one of them is the town newspaper editor. He's an educated guy. And another man who comes to watch the parade is a local peasant, a farmer, because he hears there's going to be a big parade. And as the parade walks through the town square, out of nowhere, jumps an anarchist. This spry-looking man, wild-eyed, no one catches him. He whips out from his coat a bomb, and he throws it at the procession. And there you have this high-ranking Russian official who's sitting in a coach led by three sets of beautiful white horses, and the bomb explodes in the coach. So the next morning in the newspaper, the editor, he writes the headline of the incredible incident that he witnessed firsthand yesterday in the marketplace in the town square. That an anarchist threw a bomb and killed the high-ranking minister of the entire Tsarist Empire in front of his own eyes. And that's what he describes. Minister killed in bomb. What happens to the little farmer peasant? He goes home to his wife, and that night at the dinner table, the peasant says, "You won't believe what I saw today." He says, "I saw a parade with three pairs, three sets of the most beautiful, magnificent white horses pulling a chariot. And some Bishugana came in with a bomb and killed six horses. It was crazy." So that's really the point that I'm trying to emphasize. Right? Obviously, the difference is that the person who's discerning, who's educated, understands that what's important here is the significance, the geopolitical significance of an anarchist killing a high-ranking official in the Tsar's government. But if you're a peasant and the only thing you know in life is a farm, so to you, the big deal is that six nice horses that you could never afford in a lifetime for hundreds of thousands of rubles, they were killed in front of your own eyes in the town square. So I asked myself, Ashir Lashem ki go go, sus virochvo roma vayom? That's like the peasant coming home and saying, "Did you see all the horses died?" It should have said, ki go go, chel Mitzrayim, anshe Mitzrayim.
That's what it says in the Pasuk Lamed.
So I told you, that's what I said before, that psychologically what precipitated the Shira, of course, was the death of their tormentors. They saw that and then they sang. So why doesn't it say, Mitzriim Rama Vayam? You tell me, is there a pattern here of the Sus or there isn't a pattern of the Sus? You tell me.
Well, there's a pattern of the Sus.
Great, so now let's try to figure out what it is and what it means. One more question. This phrase, Perek Tesvav Pasuk Aleph, Ashir Lashem ki go'o go'o, what does that phrase mean? And why is that important? I will sing to God, ki ga'o ga'a, because he is exceedingly, what does the word ga'a mean? Proud. That's the source of the word ga'ava. It's a strange thing, right? He's exceedingly proud. If you were to think about it, you actually might want to describe God in very different terms. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kol Makom Shata Motze Gedulaso Shamata Motze An Vasanusa. Wherever you find His greatness, you find His humility. Why is it that in this context, we are told that God is extremely arrogant? Arrogance. The Rambam tells us that, in Hilchos Deos, that arrogance is a very, very negative trait. So we're describing the Ribono Shel Olam as super arrogant. And you have to ask yourself, what's the big deal? If you're God, okay, shkoyach, you drowned a couple of Egyptians and a few tanks. Okay, you're God. Shkoyach, big deal. So what does it mean, and why is it significant that this is go-go? So I wonder if there was something very powerful happening in this story that's kind of a backstory or an undercurrent. And that can be represented in the Sus, as it's described in Perek Chav in Devarim, in Parsha Shoftim, first pasuk on the next page. The pasuk says, "Ki seitzei lamalchama aloyvecha." When you go out to war, v'ra'isa, and you will see. What are you going to see when you go out to war? Sus varechev, a horse and chariot. Am rav mimcha, many more people than you. Right, you're not going to see the people first. You're going to see the sus. You're going to see the horse. Lo si rameim, don't fear them. Ki Hashem Elokecha imach hama'alcha me'eretz Mitzrayim. God is taking care of you. God is in charge. Because the sus, the horse, that is the representation and the concept of bravado, of the image of honor and masked false bravery, intimidation. You see the sus and you're scared. You feel impotent. You don't know what you can do. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, don't worry, because I'm in charge. You notice that when Haman is asked what he would like from Achashverosh, you know, Purim is coming on, what does he tell?
He wants to ride around.
Ride on the king's horse.
I want to ride on the king's horse. And do you know what the Gemara says in Sanhedrin? On Daf Chav Beis? The Gemara says that it's actually an Isser for a regular person to ride on the king's horse. The Melech Yisrael. The Jewish king from Melech Malchus Beis David, no one else is allowed to ride on his horse. Because the horse is a symbol of honor. It's a status symbol. That's why Haman wants it. That's why, in truth, it is a real status symbol. You can't just ride on the king's horse. Because that is the semel, the image of pride, of honor, of kavod, and maybe even of gaiva, of arrogance. A person comes to the sus and says, I'm a somebody. The king rides on the horse. We know the Orcha Sadikim on page 5, this classic Musa Sefer tells us, you know what the worst midah in the world is?
The worst what?
The worst midah, the worst character trait. Shar HaRishon, the first character trait, he talks about a sequence of character traits that we can work on. Nedaber al midas hagaiva, let us speak about hubris, about arrogance. Umatov shenizdame tchila l'chol hana'arim. How good is it that this is the first issue we're going to tackle in this entire volume? Mipnei chiyuv ha'adam lehibadol mimena. Because of the obligation, the necessity of the person to step away from it. Kihu pesach l'ra'os rabos. Arrogance is the opening, it is the doorway, the pesach, the gateway to many evils. V'lo ra'inu kazos l'ra'a b'chol hamidos. We've never seen anything as bad as this in any of the other character traits. L'chein, therefore, tzarecha adam l'hischakim l'hanhiga el minag haroi v'litchus osu b'makom she'en haroi lo. You have to step away from arrogance, because that is the source, it's the shorish of all other evils in our character. That's why the Rambam says that, generally speaking, you know, the golden mean, you have to go mimutza. Not when it comes to two things, the Rambam says in Hilchos Deos. When it comes to arrogance and anger. Why does he say those two things? Because they're really one. A person only becomes angry. I only get angry. I only get frustrated when my expectations are not met. I was waiting. I was thinking I was hoping. So when I isn't met, so then I get angry. I can't believe he did that to me, or she said that to me. So they're really one mida and the same. The gaiva precipitates the katz. The katz is the anger, is the consequence of the pride. But the Rambam says you have to become an extremist and stay away from this. And the Gemara says, Tov as Hashem kol gval lev. The Gemara says that because ultimately, a person who is arrogant is centering around the I. What I? The I of the self. And not what I? The I of Anochi Hashem Elokecha. We have to make a choice. There's only one middle, right? Imagine a circle. There's only one point in the middle of the circle, and the question is, who's in the middle of that circle? Is it me, Reuven Brand, or is it the Ribono Shel Olam in the middle of that circle? I love, but I can't remember where I found it. There was once a great Hasidic story, a little Sipuri Maisim, a story of a Chassid who came. I forget exactly who it was. Maybe it was Rav Meir of Premishlan or someone else. And the chassid knocked on the door of his Rebbe. And the Rebbe said, "Who's there?" And the chassid, who used to come often, he said, "It is I." And the Rebbe said, "Who's there?" And he said, "It is I." And the Rebbe said, "Are you sure? Who's there?" And the chassid said, "It is I. So-and-so, your chassid." The Rebbe yells out from the other room, "Come back in an hour." The chassid is wondering, he's curious. He says, "Okay." So he's going to go find his way to the Beis Medrash, he'll learn for a half hour, come back. On his way to the Beis Medrash, he gets met by a group of thugs who beat him terribly and steal his wallet. And he understands this, Heilige Chassid understands that the Rebbe sent him, and there's a reason for this. He comes back to the Rebbe totally bedraggled. He knocks on the door. And he says, "Rebbe, please let me in." The Rebbe lets him in. He says, "Rebbe, what happened?" The Rebbe says, "I asked who was at the door. And you said, I am at the door. There's only one I." That's it. There's no I. What do you mean you said, "I am at the door"? Reuven Brand is at the door. Not I. Who's I? There's only one I. I love that story.
Yeah.
But the idea is that at the end of the day, either we believe that the Ribono Shel Olam is in the center, and that's where we're going to put our trust, our focus, and our faith, or I am in the center. And so I'm going to inflate myself and my ego and my bravado to say that I'm here. The Sus says, "I am a somebody," because the Sus is the source of kavod. And we say, no. Mize melech ha-kavod. Who is the king who deserves the honor? It's the Ribono Shel Olam. The Torah tells us, now to go to page 6, someone alluded to this earlier. The Torah says that a king, and notice this carefully, a king, rak lo yarba lo susim. A king should not have too many horses. Why shouldn't a king have too many horses? Now we understand why a king shouldn't have too many horses. Because he shouldn't be too full of himself. Well, what does the pasuk then say? What does it say? That's right. That's right. You know where the susim come from? You know where the horses come from? They come from Egypt. Don't have too many horses, says the Torah to the king. Because if you get too many horses, you know where you're going to go back to? V'lo yashiv es ha'am mitzrayim alaman harbo sus. Because the susim, the horses, come from Egypt. What does it mean now that the susim come from Egypt? The kavod, the honor, the idea of bravado and reliance, that comes from Egypt. So the Ramban, Nachmanides here, explains why. Look at the second line on the left side. Shasusim b'yamisham. Horses were raised in Egypt. That's an equestrian comment, but it's a deeper comment. The idea of saying, I got this. I don't need God's help. That comes from Egypt. So the Ramban says, the concern is, who is the king going to rely on? Is he going to rely on his own bravado? He says, look, I have a ton of horses. Egypt gave me horses. I can rely on that, or am I going to rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Who's in the middle? Who is the Melech HaKavod? And now, we can start to put together the pattern that the Torah gives us. Says the Medrash Rabbah, beautiful Medrash on page 7, Parashas Naso, Dovar Acher, Gavas Odom Tashpilenu. The Ribbono Shel Olam will lower the arrogance of man. Who is that? Zeh Paro. This is Paro. Shenizgoy al Moshe, that Paro lorded and was proud over Moshe of Omar, and he says, Mi Hashem Asher Eshma Bakolo. Who is God? I never heard of God. Right? There's another phrase in Chazal. Li Hayor Va'ani Asisani. Paro made himself into a deity. He deified himself. He says, I made the Nile. I am the Melech HaKavod. I'm going to be represented by the Sus. The Sus is this imposing, honorable creature. Paro says, I'm the man. I'm the deity. Gaiva. Arrogance, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, Gavas Azdom Tashpilenu. So what happens? V'hishpilo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and God lowered him. V'niro Paro V'chelo. So God took Paro and diminished him. So now, perhaps we can understand the whole story. The reason why the Sus keeps coming up is because Paro and the Sus are this ideal of kavod, of honor, of arrogance. Who's the source of our confidence? Paro says, I'm confident. I'm coming after you guys. So the Jewish people look back and they keep seeing the Sus. They keep seeing the symbol of honor and they keep being intimidated. And that's what they're going to sing about. They're going to say, Sus v'roch v'rom v'yom. Guess what? HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed that the source of all honor, of all confidence, is not in a horse. Gavas Adam Tashpilenu. It's not in Paro. It's in the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. And this perhaps is why Unkelus, go to the next page, go to 8. Unkelus does not translate go ga'a, which is the duplicate form of super arrogant. He does not translate it as extra arrogant. He says, you see where it is on the left side in underline? Nishabach v'node kodem Hashem, let us praise and thank before God. Arei is go'ei al gave sonaya. God is go'o, is proud, al gave sonaya, on those who is proud. V'geyusa, and pride, delehi. It's not that God is super proud. It's that God is demonstrating that He is the source of pride by subjecting those other ones who say, I'm proud. I'm the source of confidence. The message that He was trying to give the Jewish people is, Chevra, don't be swayed by what looks like power, what looks like confidence in the Sus. Trust me. Don't trust the Sus. So this image is going to come back. It's not over. Look on page 9. Many, many decades, centuries later, there was a righteous king. And this king was Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu was surrounded by the hordes of Ashur, the Assyrian army. And at that time, first it was a different man, then it came Sancheiriv, right? Tiglath-Pileser carried out a couple of raids, then Sancheiriv came. Sancheiriv is the king of Ashur, and at that time, there were two world forces, world dominant powers in that region. Ashur was in the north, and Egypt was in the south. Ultimately, later, after the death of Yoshiyahu, Egypt is going to come and destroy Ashur, which is going to be bad, because after Egypt destroys Assyria, who comes to destroy Egypt from Babylonia. The northwest? Exactly, Babylonia. So that was going to be the precursor to the destruction, to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Right? So first it was the Assyrian exile, then the Assyrians get pushed back by the Egyptians, and then the Egyptians get wiped out by the Babylonians. So this man, Sancheriv, and his hordes, they send an emissary. They save a guy, Rav Shakeh, whether that's his name or his title, doesn't really matter. Rav Shakeh stands outside the walls of Yerushalayim and he starts shouting messages, inflammatory remarks. You know, you guys are nothing. Why are you wasting your time? Sancheriv conquered the entire world. Don't think you're going to stand up to him. Who do you have to rely on anyway? Look at all the gods of all the other nations. They didn't save them. Their gods didn't help them. Your God's not going to help you like anybody else. Not only that, says Rav Shakeh to him, Pasuk Vav, end of Pasuk Hey, who are you, Almi Batachta, who do you rely on? Hine Batachta, Al Mishenes Hakana Haratus Hazeh Al Mitzrayim. You, who are you relying on that's going to help you out, who's going to bail you out, who's going to be your source of confidence? This rickety staff, an old wobbly cane. And who is that? That's Egypt. You think you're going to get support from Egypt? Guess what? We're going to rock their world just like we're going to rock yours. You're not going to get away with this. We're going to destroy them. He says to Chizkiyahu, you think you can rely on Egypt because they're super mighty. Don't rely on Egypt. And he says, I'm going to give you a test. Listen to me, Pasuk Ches. Let me give you 2,000 horses. Do you think you can put riders on them? You're relying on Egypt and on their chariots, on their horses. I'll give you horses. What do you see here? It's the same image. It's the image of confidence. It's the image of the arrogant. The bravado. Sancheriv and Rav Shakeh say, you want horses? You got them in Egypt? And I'll give you more horses, and I'll still whip you. So what does Chizkiyahu say ultimately? He says, Rav Shakeh, you have to understand. He doesn't tell this to him. But he basically says, we don't rely on horses. Of course, we fight with horses, right? There's an old vort. I heard few times from the Shiva of Karen Biavner of Greenberg, he said, Eile v'recha ve'eile basusim v'anachnu b'shem Hashem Elokeinu nazkir. They come with rechav and susim, and we come with the name of God. That doesn't mean that the IDF only runs around on the Gaza border with Tanakhs. It means we have rechav and susim, we have horses, but on those rechav and susim, we have the name of God. It doesn't mean we eschew military defense operations, IDF. We have Rechav and Susim, but that's not the source. V'anachnu b'shem Hashem Elokeinu nazkir. Chizkiyahu says to him, you're right, we don't have enough horses now. But the Navi told me we're going to be okay. The Ribbono Shel Olam says we're going to be okay. So we are going to rely on God because of the words of the prophet. So now all of this together, we see the Yesod and why it is an eternal message. Of course, it's a message for the melech. That's what the Ramban was saying. The king can't have too many horses, because if the king has too many horses, he's going to be going back to Egypt, to the idea that we have the power, we have the bravado and the confidence, and that's symbolized by the horse. The horses are going to come from Egypt. So we say, Lo yar velo susim, velo yashivesa al mitzrayma. Now we understand why the sus keeps coming up in the narrative. Because the sus is the symbol of bravado, the intimidation, the confidence. So we say ultimately, Ashir al Hashem ki goga, the Ribbono Shel Olam showed us that all of that bravado, all of that, you know, that illusion of confidence is goya al gev sanaya. The Ribbono Shel Olam is greater than that. And that perhaps is underlying the theme that the Rambam is telling us. Of course, there is the technical prohibition of living in Egypt on a permanent basis. But maybe there's a takeaway message for us. Of course, the Rav Avadia says, yes, the journalist can go to Egypt and he can report and he can come back, no problem. But the message of not going back to Mitzrayim, which unfortunately was something that the Jews struggled with throughout the desert, was the question of how we put the Ribbono Shel Olam in the center of our lives. And who do we rely on? And it's not an easy thing because the Ribbono Shel Olam tells us not to rely on miracles. And sometimes the Ribbono Shel Olam has calculations, and even though, you know, we think he's going to come and swoop in at the end of the day, sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. But ultimately, the Lo Vigvuras Hasus Yechpots, the idea that ultimately the kavod and the gaiva, the healthy gaiva, the proper honor and the confidence that we're going to have is not going to be in Egypt and in their horses. And it's certainly not going to be in ourselves. Vayishman Yeshurun Vayivat, there's a danger of thinking Kol Chivya Otzim Yadi. When we say Oz Yashir, Sus Verochu Ravom Vayam, it means we're smashing the sus. We're smashing the symbol of hubris, thinking that we're so great. Ultimately, however great we are, is Goy Al Giv Sanaya. The Ribbono Shel Olam is greater than that. And so we need to constantly be striving to put the Ribbono Shel Olam in the middle of that circle, to see him as the source of all gaiva. And the more that we do that, the more we actually, the Sfas Emes points out, we actually become greater. You know, as much as we diminish ourselves through humility, klape vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the more we realize he is Go'o Go'a, then we also become great. Because we become a part of that. The more that we push him out of the circle, the more we're diminished. The more we make him in the center of the circle, then the more great we really are in our own lives. Have a good Erev Shabbos.